Calculations of scientists suggested an earth tremor in Siberia, but it was not until 1921 that reports began to come from Russia of a tremendous explosion which destroyed 80 million trees over an area of nearly 2,000 square miles of Tunguska. It does look part of central Siberia, on the brink of the Arctic Circle. Eyewitness accounts describe the wall of fire, 12 miles high and 20 miles long. Astronomers believe that a huge meteor had crashed in this remote part of Siberia. Expeditions had difficulty in reaching the scene of the crash because of the marshes and the Siberian jungle of firs. When the locality was found, the vast scope of the devastation amazed the scientists. All life had been destroyed within a radius of 20 miles. They saw millions of felled trees, but found no crater from a meteor. Another strange phenomenon became apparent during one of their expeditions. They found that the forest was destroyed in islands or patches. Also that the slant of the felled trees did not point to a single center of explosion, which would have felled them radially from the center. Lines could be found in the forest. All of this did not fit into the meteor theory. A responsible group of Soviet scientists is now propounding another hypothesis. Fantastic as it sounds. A cosmic ship, they say, may have crashed in this desolate part of the world. This hypothesis is supported by two weighty facts. On the day of the explosion in Siberia, a French astronomer sighted an unidentified object in space through his telescope. In 1957, a Russian expedition to the site of the explosion found particles of iron which were not part of a meteorite. According to Professor B. Lyapunov of the Russian Moscow Academy of Sciences, the cosmic ship selected Mongolia as its landing site because of the flat character of the terrain facilitating the landing of a huge spaceship. He believes the ship orbited the Earth. The reason why the French astronomer did not see it the second time is because its trajectory of flight had been changed before landing. Professor Lyapunov theorizes that the astronauts of 1908, whoever they were, must have missed Mongolia due to the mechanical difficulties in the spaceship. Flying at terrific velocity, the cosmic ship found itself over Tunguska, 1,000 miles north in a very short time. Anticipating a crash, the navigators put their ship into a vertical position to stop its fall. Professor Lyapunov thinks that the exhaust from the vessel produced the strange patches in the forest. In a final attempt to accelerate the ship upward, stressing the reactor to the maximum, the vessel blew up. Professor Lyapunov is of the opinion that the visitors from space used atomic propellants. Now remember, this is only theory. But this theory is not without corroboration. Eyewitnesses described a huge mushroom-shaped cloud, which followed a fireball in the sky. Those eyewitnesses claimed that the fireball was brighter than the sun. People living near the site of the explosion died of a then unknown illness, with symptoms the same as those resulting from exposure to atomic radiation. As in an atomic explosion, the greatest force was felt at some distance from the center. Professor Lyapunov says that the cosmic ship theory can fully explain the Tunguska phenomenon. Professor Sternfield, a Soviet scientist behind the Sputnik, states that the cosmic ship probably came from Venus. He made this conclusion because of the favorable position of Venus relative to the Earth on that day of 1908. Remember, I'm not telling you this is true. I'm only reporting to you what the experts say. In this particular case, the experts happen to be a couple of top Russian scientists. Of course, when do we know when to believe the Russian scientists? Well, we have some strange things going on in our own missile program. And this bit of information comes to me from Holloman Air Force Base in New Mexico. It happened some time ago, but it's just now getting into public notice. The incident took place on April the 3rd of this year, 2 months ago. At X plus 3, during a routine MACE fire the missile suddenly went out of control. Simultaneously, the boys at Tula Peak were astounded to hear the telemetry band being jammed by a strange voice. This is one of the tracking stations. This strange phenomenon persisted for the remainder of the mission, a period of approximately 15 minutes duration. Skip effects of ionosphere reflections are not uncommon in the VHF band and lower, but both frequencies concerned here are in excess of 200 megacycles and are chosen because of their immunity to skip effects. The question is, what transmitting source within line of sight range interfered with the MACE mission? Was a spare transmitter on the ground flipped on by accident? No. Telemetry transmitters are not equipped to handle voice modulation. Deliberate sabotage? Not likely. Why would a saboteur waste his energy talking? And where did he get the strange language? The combined linguistic background of the listeners was able to eliminate all European languages as well as Russian and Japanese. On Monday, April 6, two Air Force officers arrived at Holloman Air Force Base from Wright-Patterson Field. They called a conference of military personnel concerned with this incident. Stamped the telemetry tapes top secret. They had previously been unclassified, and they tucked the tapes under their arms and went home to Wright Field. And I imagine that's the last we're going to hear about that. But it happened in one of our missile firings at Holloman Air Force Base in New Mexico. And from Denmark comes a story of a young lady who was on her way home from a store riding her autocycle. She drove along a lonely road in the northern part of Funen, Denmark. She had just passed the farm when the motor stopped. She knew motors, so she got off to try to start the motor again. She could not find any faults in the motor, but in spite of this, she could not start it again. She gave up doing more about it, so she put up the cycle and started cycling the ordinary way of pedaling. She had just started and had driven a short way when she saw, over the forest, about 500 meters in front of her, a round, bright light, like the light from the headlight of a car coming towards her. She saw that it went toward the ground, and when it had come down about 1 meter's height from the ground, it continued at this height during the rest of the experience. There was a corona around the light, at least it seemed, so that it lighted the field below. There were three fields along the road to the left of her, and it was in the farthest field from her and about 200 meters from the road that the light was when it kept coming toward her, parallel to the road. When she was between the farm and the school, which are along this road, the light turned, without stopping its speed, in an angle of 90 degrees, and came straight out toward the road where she was. She was scared, and hurried to get away. The light was from 2 to 3 meters from the left side of the roadside when she thought it was going to rush at her. But suddenly, when it was on a level with her, it did another 90-degree turn to the right and continued without changing speed along the edge of the road and disappeared behind her. She kept on cycling forward with her heavy cycle, not daring to look behind her. When she came home, she gave her cycle to a mechanic and asked him to repair it. The next morning, when she went to the repair shop, she asked the mechanic what was wrong with the motor. He answered that it had worked when he started it, and there seemed to be nothing wrong with it. Later that day, she learned that two men from her village had seen an illuminated object in the sky a short time before her own experience, and the object had flown in the direction from where she had come. So they don't only stop automobiles in Texas and the United States, they stop motorbikes in Denmark. We'll have some more news for you in just a moment, but first we're going to give you a message from Doug Hatton. Well, we thought we were going to give you a message from Doug Hatton. Apparently, we've got a little technical difficulty here, and we'll pass that up. Now, how about this red-hot chain that falls from the sky? St. Louis, Missouri. This comes from the Buffalo Evening News, May the 15th, 1959. A tractor driver in the suburb of Rock Hill told police Thursday that a piece of a large chain mysteriously fell from the sky and smashed into his tractor. Wallace Baker, 31, said this thing just fell out of the sky. Another workman, James Knox, 25, said it was the weirdest thing I ever saw. Adding to the mystery, they said, was the fact that the chain, consisting of 13 large links, was red hot. Police believe the chain fell from an airplane, but no airplane was seen by the workmen. I'd like to know what an airplane is doing carrying around a red-hot chain if it did fall from an airplane. And up in Levittown, New York, we've got some more cracked windshields. Remember 3 or 4 or 5 years ago when all the pitted windshields came popping up and nobody had any good explanations? Well, apparently we've got another one in Levittown, New York. Maybe we're in for another session of them, but here at least they have an explanation. Some experts blame atmospheric conditions for the cracking of the windshields. They explain it this way. Interiors of car windows, which absorb heat during the day, stay warm at night, while the exteriors become cool. Glass then cracks because of unequal temperature on either side. A similar epidemic of shattered auto windshields occurred across the nation 5 years ago and has recurred periodically. Well, I don't seem to remember too many of these incidents between the 5 years ago and today. I wonder why the weather is suddenly different 5 years ago. It would appear if that condition was the normal thing, that it would happen every year when the temperature gets as it is now. Out in Washington, D.C., up in Washington, D.C., they have a column in a newspaper called the Criswell Column. Through Criswell's eyes, you see the future. Here's a man who's always predicting the future. Here's a couple of interesting predictions he's made in the last few weeks. One of them, new reports about mysterious planes in our skies, as proven by images on our radar screens. And another, I predict that terrifying messages picked up from our man-made moons will result in some very sober thinking by Congress. And another one, I predict that outer space will become nearby space within the next month when the Pentagon reveals some of its top secret files. So maybe they've fired something out much farther than we know about. Maybe some of these things in our atmosphere are our own. Maybe. And what are the papers saying about fallout? London, May 24th, United Press. Radioactive fallout has caused abnormalities in 16 species of plants growing on 3 atolls of the Marshall Islands. The British science magazine Nature reported. It said that fallout, which followed the 1954 Bikini Atoll hydrogen bomb test, caused abnormalities including loss of leaves and green coloring and mistletoe-like abnormal growth. Apparently this atomic radiation isn't good for plant life or human life. And the Air Force is working on plans for a gas station out in space. Now, a gas station, satellites that would orbit 200 miles above the Earth with fuel for military spaceships. So says the publication Washington Science Trends. It said the ball-shaped satellites would be 75 feet in diameter and would hold about 1 million pounds of fuel. The publication said most of the research had centered on the problem of curbing evaporation of the fuel. Analysis indicated evaporation could be held to an acceptable 5% a year if the sun's rays were effectively reflected. The General Electric Company is working on something new. Reported that it has developed an electricity-producing fuel cell that might be suitable for use in space vehicles. The cell is a 3-inch disc, a 1/2 inch thick. It produces electricity from hydrogen and oxygen. The disc is divided into 2 chambers. Hydrogen molecules break up at an electrode in one and move on into the other chamber, producing current. Well, that's getting very much like free energy. I wonder if it's the free energy that Otis T. Carr was supposed to be harnessing. Well, looks more like Otis T. Carr is being harnessed himself. He is charged in Oklahoma City with violating the state regulations on stock sales. I think we told you some time ago that an investigation was going on. Well, they have arraigned he and Art Aho and a fellow by the name of Kendrick and another one by the name of Colton. Apparently, they did not check with the Federal Securities and Exchange Commission before putting their stock on sale. So it looks like Otis T. Carr is going to be in hot water. Now let's see what else we have interesting tonight. We tell you the latest every so often about George Adamski. As you know, George Adamski is on a worldwide lecture tour. He gets boos in one place and he gets cheers in another. He didn't do so well with the press in the Netherlands on his visit to the Queen. What'll happen when he comes to Miami, of course, we don't know. The story of George Adamski, who was on a world lecture tour, is extremely fantastic. To have met people from other planets, or to have circled the moon in a spaceship, is something that one finds in science fiction. No wonder George Adamski is a source of controversy. Now, who or what makes people controversial? To make a broad generalization, it is the so-called public opinion which decides if the issue is controversial or not. In the Baconian parlance, it is the idols of the tribe, the cave, the marketplace, and the theater which influence our thought. One can be made a fool by believing in a charlatan. But one can also become a criminal by accusing an innocent person. Within the next few years, an American or a Russian space rocket will travel around the moon. It may even land there with special equipment. Lunar landscapes will appear on TV screens in Washington and Moscow. If pictures of animal life are transmitted from the moon, then George Adamski will be winning the case because he claims there is animal life there. If none is found, he will be losing the case. In the meantime, it would be futile in this controversy to argue about things that can be checked by space exploration. The same applies to those disputes one hears nowadays as to whether the planets in our solar system are inhabited, and if so, by whom. The Russian rocket, the Dream, has already touched the orbit of Mars. An American rocket has become a planetoid of the solar system. The time when mankind will come into direct contact with plant, animal, and possibly human life on other planets is fast approaching. If the Russian report of a crashed cosmic ship in Siberia is correct, then at last we have tangible proof in the form of metallic splinters of non-meteoric origin that spaceships do fly between planets and perhaps between solar systems. Now it's time for a message from our sponsor, the Dean Bell Bookshop, 221 Northeast 1st Avenue in downtown Miami. This is the bookstore that carries the best supply of books on this field of space in the city of Miami. They always have at least 25 different books by all the leading authors in the field. Also books on the ancient and lost civilizations. And they carry a marvelous supply of science fiction magazines, all the popular science fiction magazines, including back issues. This is the place to get your back issues of most any magazine. So on your next trip downtown, be sure to stop and shop the D and Bill Bookshop at 221 Northeast 1st Avenue in downtown Miami. Also, they carry a very large supply of used books. And because they're used, you can get them at half the original price or many times even less. So this is your opportunity to add to your library with some volumes you have been wanting at about half the usual price. So patronize the D and Bill Bookshop at 221 Northeast 1st Avenue in downtown Miami. Tell them Norb Gehry from the space station sent you in. I have a very good article here, written by someone who seems to know his business, which we'll now give you, or give you what we have time for. And it's entitled, Not Alone in the Universe. I've given you that sort of a report before, but from a more or less a religious point of view. Now let's take another one from the scientific point of view. Who is to say what the ultimate destiny of man will be. Are we in our infancy to be cut down like unripe grains of wheat before the holocaust of nuclear destruction? Or are we destined to ripen and mature till finally we have great ships that will take us to the far corners of the universe? In some stage in our future development, we most certainly will have interstellar travel. I didn't say interplanetary travel. We're about to have that now. I said interstellar travel between the stars. Man is not destined to spend the rest of his days within the confines of this insignificant solar system. And insignificant we most certainly are. We are located on one of the sparsely populated outer ends of an arm in the Milky Way galaxy. The center of the Milky Way is located in the region of Sagittarius. And from our position, if we traveled at the speed of light, 186,000 miles a second, it would take 25,000 years to reach the center of this galaxy. That will partially demonstrate the vastness of our galactic system. Yet our galaxy is but an insignificant speck of dust in the cosmos. A galaxy in appearance resembles a spinning wheel with a solid-looking core and numerous arms all pointing in the same direction. Another name frequently given to galaxies is island universes. And approximately 200 million island universes have been recorded by the 200-inch Hale Reflector Telescope at Mount Palomar in California. One fact now should be painfully obvious. Space is large and man is small. Astronomers are reasonably confident that many, if not the majority of stars, have planets revolving around them. The double star system of 61 Cygni, which is one of our closest neighbors, is thought to have a planetary system. If planetary systems are at all rare, it is very coincidental that such a close neighbor to us is also gifted with planets. If only one in every 100 stars in this galaxy had planetary systems, and planets capable of supporting life, the total number of habitable planets, at a conservative estimate, in our galaxy alone would be in the vicinity of 1,000 million, or 1 billion. As previously mentioned, there are about 200 million galaxies visible through our telescopes. As telescopes become more powerful, new galaxies will be discovered by the millions. Even if only one star in every 1,000 had planets harboring intelligent life, there still would be myriads of planets with intelligent life. It is doubtful whether any man with reasonable intelligence would deny the possibility or extreme probability of intelligences superior to us existing elsewhere in the universe. An interesting question now raises itself. Would it be possible, with our scientific knowledge, to detect their presence in any way without actually traveling through intergalactic space? If any intelligent race has evolved in other solar systems, it would be quite in order to assume that they use radio for communication purposes. Unless, of course, their technology is so far in advance of ours that radio is to them what smoke signals is to us. If, however, radio transmission is being used by intelligent beings in another solar system for communication from planet to planet or from star to star, it would be very possible for us to receive such transmissions, provided the signal is of sufficient strength through our radio telescopes. And, ladies and gentlemen, we have received some mighty weird signals through our radio telescopes. Well, our time is almost up, so we're not going to be able to give you any of this information through the radio telescopes, but this is one of the fields in which the United States government and our scientists are very much interested, and they are continually building bigger and better radio telescopes. Maybe we can pick this up and continue another Saturday night, but for now our time is up, so once again, it's good night.